As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Starcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. Today we have a very special guest on the pod, Eintracht Frankfurt hooligan and award-winning author Ronald Reng joins us to tell you everything you ever wanted to know, and a few bits on top of that about the club's fantastic season. Christoph Biermann is also on hand to shine more light on the murky conflict between Hansi Flick and sections of the Bayern hierarchy. Do Dortmund have a chance to make it past Manchester City? Where Köln writer fire Marcus Gisdol? And could Julian Nagelsmann go to Tottenham next? All these questions will be answered here in Starcast. Welcome, Ronny. Welcome, Christoph. Welcome, dear listener. Before we get going, though, a quick reminder that The Athletic's fine written content is available for just £3.99 a month for 6 months at the moment. Go to theathletic.com/starcastpod to sign up. Schnell. Right, boys. I mean, when Ronny's on the pod, there's only one place to start, and that's Bayern. No, I'm joking. Ronny, we've waited, I don't know, 20 years to talk to you about Eintracht being in the Champions League places. This is your stage. Take it away. How do you feel?
You could have talked to me in 1960 if we would have been born then. Everybody remembers the big Glasgow final when Eintracht Frankfurt took on Real Madrid in the, well, it wasn't called the Champions League. But we are back again, yes. And it's not such a big surprise. I mean, the team has been building for at least 4 years, and I don't know. I think sometimes in February, the typical Eintracht Frankfurt feeling that they will cock it up in the end went just away. And you got a feeling, no, this team is just full of confidence. This team know what they want to do, and they're flying. I mean, I think the game on Saturday against Wolfsburg, I'm sure you saw it. And you two guys watch much more Bundesliga than I do, but I had a feeling it was the best Bundesliga game of the season I've seen. You know, two teams really went for it. Both teams wanted to win it, and Eintracht were the better side on the pitch.
What's been the secret in the second half of the season? Is it really the return of Luka Jovic, which has added so much up front? Kostic looks much happier. Andre Silva has been phenomenal. Is Jovic the guy that just adds that little bit else to everyone else?
No, I think the big change came in December after the, well, at least in Frankfurt, famous lack of courage debate. You know, when I think it was in November, there was a game against Stuttgart, and Adi Hütter, the manager, fielded just ball-winning midfielders. He played a midfield of Kor, Ilzanka, Zuber, I think he played, and they were 2-0 down at halftime. And every Frankfurt supporter, in particular, every Frankfurt journalist went ballistic because they felt, no, there's a big lack of courage here, Mr. Hütter. And he got lots of stick after the game. I think the Frankfurter Rundschau, the local paper, you know, these journalists, they are covering Eintracht for 30 years and they've seen the big years when they just went for him and said, you can't play with such a lack of courage. And Hütter called in an off-the-record press conference with the journalist. He got lots of talks within the club that maybe he should bring the ball players in the team. And he did. I think he tried again with a more defensive team in Wolfsburg in the first half of the season, lost again. And then there was this big turning point, the Augsburg game, when for the first time he played Younes and Barcock. And these are really five-a-side players. I mean, the way they play football is like on a five-a-side pitch. If you go to North London, you want to have them on your team, really. And they really played an impressive game in Augsburg. They won 2-0. And from that point, they started to believe that they can go out and play football. And he fields the ball players. And Frankfurt, maybe, apart from Bayern Munich, has more ball players in the team than any other team in the Bundesliga. So the confidence was growing. The team had a feeling, we know what we do. And at least since 3 or 4 years at Frankfurt, there is this winning mentality. You both know Dortmund always get criticized for not having mentality. And lots of people get it wrong. They think the players are not strong enough. They don't go in for the tackles. That's not the mentality you want in your team. You want a winning mentality. The feeling that we go out there and we got the confidence. We know what we do. We are tactically well prepared. We know our way to play and we can beat anybody. And Frankfurt has this mentality developed in the big games of the last 3 or 4 years because they had lots of special nights when they took Chelsea to penalties in the semi-final of the Europa League. So there is a feeling in the club and within the team, we can do something special here. And that helps the team. You know, I always compare them to the old days, 2000 years ago, when the German tribes took on the Roman emperor. Once the German tribes won one big battle, they were looking for the second battle because they got a feeling we can beat those Romans. And this is what's happening at Frankfurt for 3 or 4 years. Kovac was the first manager who brought that mentality to the club. And I also think it's about goal setting, really. Lots of clubs, they go in, mid-table clubs like Frankfurt, they go into the season saying, well, we want to finish on 45 points. Or they say, well, we want to finish in eighth place. And this is really an abstract goal. But Kovac was the first in Frankfurt to go in and said, we want to be the fittest team in the league. And this is a very concrete goal. This gives you something to work in training every day. We want to be the fittest team in the league. And that's how they play for 3 or 4 years. And even if the players change, they maintain that mentality. You know, on Saturday, we're playing three at the back. None of the three players who played on Saturday at the back, Ilzanka, Tuta, and Ndika, was in the first team in the first half of the season. And they just came in, and it works because there is this mentality and feeling we are a winning side.
My history is patchy, but who won the contest between the Romans and the Germans at the end? In those,
we are not there at the end, I think. Yeah.
Right. Because of how impressed were you with Frankfurt's win against Wolfsburg?
Yeah, I'm really impressed by Ronnie's analysis.
Well, we all are.
Yeah, and so I mean, embedded in with a broad perspective, historical perspective, but I'm surprised that he didn't mention Kamada at all, because I mean, as he was writing recently in an article that I would like to recommend to everybody, is that he is the biggest Kamada fan in the world, or he is fighting for supremacy in that field with Adi Hütter. I don't know. Yeah, so maybe he can tell us a bit about Kamada later on. And yeah, obviously, I mean, everybody was impressed, not only by the Frankfurt performance, but also by the game altogether, because it was there were two teams that went out to win. And interesting also that Frankfurt managed to put four into Wolfsburg's goal. I don't know how much did they got three goals against them in the whatever last eight matches before or so. So that is a huge achievement. And normally maybe you would have expected it to be a bitter fought 1-0, 1-1, 0-0 or whatever, but that it was so much free-flowing football there was really impressive. And I found it interesting that Ronnie was talking so much about mentality and fitness together with the footballing aspect of Eintracht Frankfurt, because what we have been saying in recent weeks and months is this muscular aspect of Eintracht Frankfurt, because they combine two big qualities. The one is playing nice football, but on the other hand, also being a tough team to beat. And that brings a combination that is really impressive and fun to watch, even for a neutral. So even if you're not very interested in Eintracht Frankfurt because you're not a fan, it's always good to watch them play.
Ronnie, Frankfurt are still 7 points clear of Dortmund in fourth spot. They're now just 1 point behind Wolfsburg in third. So it's not longer just a case of holding on to fourth. They might actually finish third this season. Amidst all the enjoyment and the excitement, is there also a worry among Eintracht fans or maybe within the club that what's going to come next might not be as good? And I'm, of course, referring to some strong rumours that Adi Hütter might move to Borussia Mönchengladbach at the end of the season. There will be players like Filip Kostic who have not managed to move to a big club so far, who might now feel the time is right. We don't know what's going to happen with Luka Jovic, but it's unlikely that Frankfurt, I think, will be able to keep him for a longer time. Is there a concern that this is as good as it gets and next year is going to be very difficult, even if they do finish in the Champions League?
Well, on a general level, I think this is the big reason why German teams haven't performed in the Europa League and on a smaller scale in the Champions League, because there have been teams like Frankfurt this season who pushed up in the table, and at the end of the season they were basically torn apart because they lost their manager, like Hoffenheim when they qualified for the Champions League 2 or 3 years ago, and then Julian Nagelsmann went on to Leipzig. So this is basically an accident bound to happen to Frankfurt as well. They're already losing their vice president for sports relationship or for sports matters, Freddy Bobic, who really gave a good structure to the club, the scouting system, who really had a good eye for spotting players and had built up good relationships with clubs like Real Madrid, so they could get a player like Jovic on the loan. It seems they are losing Hütter as well, which fairly I don't understand. What does he want to do at Mönchengladbach? Basically, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks since this rumor has been going on, I was talking to people at the club. Is it really true? Because I thought he was just, well, asking for, I don't know, more money on his contract in Frankfurt, you know, trying to squeeze some money out of Frankfurt, or he just wanted a pat on the back from Frankfurt saying, we love you, Adi, please stay. But it seems serious from what I hear that he really is interested in Mönchengladbach. I can't see what you win at Mönchengladbach, what you don't have at Frankfurt at the time. Of course, they have Max Eberl, which gives you stability as a sports director, somebody who's really behind you, but he might leave in 1 or 2 years' time anyway. So it will be a loss because at the same time, you lose the two guys who make the decision on the pitch. And as far as the players are concerned, I'm not sure who will leave. I don't think they know yet. They all have contracts. You know, Eintracht Frankfurt have been really good in renegotiating the contracts. So the contracts run at least for 2 years with all the big players like Kamada, Kostic, Ndika, players who are really interested. But it's more confusing than worrying at the moment.
I agree with Ronnie. I also try to get my head around the idea why Hütter should leave for Borussia Mönchengladbach. So I mean, we are often talking about the next step idea when it comes to successful managers moving from one club to another. But I don't see the next step here. Maybe there is something going on at Frankfurt that behind the scenes where things maybe with the departure of of Freddy Bobic, maybe make a manager like Adi Hütter less optimistic about the coming years. I don't know. That is a mystery to be solved right now.
Well, it'd certainly be a shame if Adi Hütter wasn't there to reap the rewards of this fantastic season, taking Frankfurt to the Champions League for the first time ever, hopefully with fans, because we all know how important the supporters are to the club and how amazing it would be to see them travel to those games in the Champions League. But Ronnie, if he does go, have you heard anything about possible replacement?
Oh, I haven't heard anything officially. I don't think they are looking for a replacement yet. I mean, I was talking to somebody who's making decision at the club last week, and they were still trying to find out what's going on with Hütter at the time. I think the obvious choice for me would be Domenico Tedesco, who is a great coach. And according to what I heard, I'm not watching Russian football. He's with Spartak Moscow at the time, but he plays in a much more attacking way there than he did at Schalke. That was the big question mark when he left Schalke. I think he's a very good man manager, but he was playing a very defensive football, a Mourinho kind of football. Could he take such an attacking side like Frankfurt to another level? And from what I've heard from Russia or from people who know Domenico, he changed and he did a great job there. So I think he's the obvious candidate. But as I said, that's more me thinking about a new manager than Eintracht Frankfurt at the moment. The thing with the successor for Freddy Bobic, it seems that they have found somebody, but I don't know who it is, who will take the sporting decision, you know, the kind of sports director would say in English football. And as I said, with the players, it's bound to be seen. I mean, I thought we didn't have the time to talk about Kamada because it takes ages and hours. But if you just want a few words about Kamada, I think he's very close, and I'm very serious about this, very close to play for a team like Barcelona. You know, his skills are just second to none. When you see him play, I always think of Lionel Richie, that song, Easy Like a Sunday Morning. he's just easy like a Sunday morning, like he's floating all the time. And the ideas, the vision he has in the game, it's fantastic. I don't know how you feel. I mean, we've grown a bit older and I'm just tired of watching games to see who wins and who loses. I've seen enough Frankfurt losing enough times, but I just love to watch good and strange and different football players. And I think Kamada is really the ideas he brings on the pitch, and he does it so easily like Lionel Richie. It's just fantastic. And I think in German football, there's another guy at Mönchengladbach, maybe Christoph seen play, Florian Neuhaus. He has this extra as well, where you think just in a split second, he does something which you didn't imagine a split second before. And if I think you got a few listeners in South Dakota and Missouri or something, there's a player in American football I love to watch as well. He's the playmaker at Kansas City, Ilie Sanchez. He's a different type than Kamada. He's more a passing player, but just the silk passes he has. And I think that's the real joy of football these days for me, just finding these players and following them and watching them.
But how on earth did you come across to watch Kansas City playing football?
Well, they've got a coach who admires Barcelona, and he plays he plays in the 4-3-3 system of Barcelona in a passing game, and I'm really a convict to Barcelona football, and I follow all kind of teams who play that kind of football in the world, and Kansas City are very close to Barcelona in terms of what they want to do at
Okay, well, I think that's quite enough of Frankfurt. As much as we enjoyed, Ronnie, and I'm sure we'll have
got
you back.
Got a few things more to say if you want.
Yeah, we'll do that next time. But I mean, you were saying about a club that has a sporting director probably leaving. A coach who wants out. It's a perfect segue into a Bayern discussion. we don't know, of course, if Hasan Salihamidžić will go. The indications are that it's Hansi Flick who might depart first. But following that 1-1 draw against Union Berlin, which doesn't really change all that much, Bayern still 5 points clear at the top, and of course that huge game against PSG on Tuesday, there is a feeling in Munich that things are coming to a head. And this is a case where sometimes in social media you see people saying, oh, you know, this is the media just playing up this conflict, it's not as bad. I think the reality is actually about 3 or 4 times worse than the stuff you read. We only see bits of just how bad the situation is at Bayern. Ronnie, you have connections to Munich. You're pretty close to the city as well. What is your understanding of what's going on there, and what is your prediction of how this is going to end?
I got a feeling right from the start when Hansi Flick came on that he used Hasan Salihamidzic as a punching ball, exactly, that's the word, to get closer to the team, to the players. And that was my feeling right from the start, because there was a really anti-Salihamidzic feeling in the dressing room, that they didn't rate him, that they were making jokes about him. And I think the bottom line is that Hansi Flick doesn't rate him as a sports director, that he thinks for some reason his signings weren't good enough, that maybe his signings were too late in the season. And you can see he doesn't play the players that Salihamidzic brought in. Bounassar and Mark Hocker, they just have 3 or 4 games in the whole season. So it's hard for anybody else to really judge them and say if they're good enough or not. From what I hear from it's from the managerial team, is that even on the training pitch, these players are not good enough and they don't give you a reason to play them. But I haven't seen a single training, so I couldn't judge it. But so that was really coming to high noon basically for some time now. And I got a feeling, or from the sources I have at the club, is that there's really a drift between Hansi Flick and the dressing room on one side and the administration side of the club on the other side. Lots of them support Salihamidzic. I mean, it's not him alone who's signing these players. He's relying a lot on Marco Neppe, the chief scout. And these players have been scouted properly, not like in the old days at Bayern Munich when somebody went to Brazil and came back with 2 players he found on a 5-a-side pitch or something, you know. So it's hard from the outside to judge who is right. But you asked me for a prediction on the outcome, and my stern prediction is that Julian Nagelsmann will be Bayern Munich manager at the start of the new season, and that Hansi Flick will take over the Germany job. And this is a good way to get out of it, of this conflict for everybody, basically. A face-saving outcome, really.
Well, my sense is that if Bayern can get Julian Nagelsmann for the summer, then there are certainly people in the club that would say, you know what, Hansi, you want out, that's fine. I still think there is a big question mark over the Nagelsmann availability. I understand that there are people at Leipzig who've made it known, and important people to Bayern, that they can basically forget about this is not going to happen. Whether that is just posturing or an attempt to extract maximum value, because I think they might actually ask for a transfer fee if they release Julian Nagelsmann, I'm not sure. But I don't know how confident Bayern really are that they can get Julian Nagelsmann. And that puts Oliver Kahn, who I think will ultimately probably make the decision, in an interesting spot, because if it's true that Hansi Flick is going to ask basically to be released after the PSG game, Kahn has to say either yes or no. And if he says yes and Bayern can't get Julian Nagelsmann, then I think they might be in a difficult position. Christoph, where do you think this is going to go?
What I find interesting and also dangerous about this conflict is, as Ronnie rightly described it, not only as a conflict between two people, between Flick and Salihamidzic, but that Flick tried, and obviously successfully tried, to bring the dressing room and all the sporting side on his side against the club. And that is a major conflict. So it's not two people where you would say, oh, come, let's sit on the table, talk this through, find a solution, and so on. But you actually split a club in that way. And that has to be solved. And obviously, there has to be a drastic solution that is a bit, this town ain't big enough for both of us. And the obvious solution is that the coach is leaving because there is interest from the German FA. They need a new national coach. He would be the perfect replacement for Jogi Löw because he knows the situation and so on and so on. But as you're rightly saying, I mean, Bayern needs a top coach, and the first choice, almost natural choice, would be Julian Nagelsmann. And what if there isn't a chance to get him? So I think Bayern is in a very complicated and very dangerous situation. And when you were starting to ask about it, I think it's true that it's not blown out of proportion by the media, maybe how problematic the situation is right now isn't stressed enough right at the moment. So I think a lot depends on also on what happens on Tuesday in Paris.
Of course, and Bayern still have a chance. I don't know how big it is, especially if Leon Goretzka might not make it. But there is a chance of overturning that, which would of course only strengthen Hansi Flick's hands. You'd think to do whatever he wants. If he of course has decided that he wants to go, then I guess the result doesn't really change all that much. But Ronnie, let me ask you this. At Bayern, coaches have never been fully in charge when it comes to signing players. The club, rightly or wrongly, in my view, largely rightly, believe that they should take a longer, more strategic view, and it's them who sign the players because players stick around longer, and it doesn't really work if you have a coach who picks his own players and then he's off and then you have players you don't want. And I'm not sure. It was interesting what you said about Hansi Flick almost sort of stoking this argument as a psychological ploy almost, because I'd be very surprised if, for example, he wouldn't have been very much aware that Jerome Boateng, for example, is not going to get a new deal. I mean, that's something that hasn't happened overnight, but Hansi Flick seemed to make a very big deal out of it and seemed to hint at the fact that he is really against that decision and he doesn't like the fact how this decision was communicated. I find it hard to distinguish between what is a bit of politics and what is his genuine feeling in that sense, because from the club's point of view, it makes a lot of sense. You wouldn't give Jerome Boateng a new deal just because Hansi Flick thinks he's a very important player now, because next year, who knows? But my question is, and this, sorry if it took a bit of time to actually come out, is that if Julian Nagelsmann is the new Bayern manager, will he be able to work within that setup where he's not really fully in charge and people above him will make decisions and maybe he won't rate one or two of those decisions or the people involved either?
I think the way Julian worked so far at Hoffenheim and Leipzig shows you that he never really forced the club to sign any players he wanted. He made his wish list clear to the club. I remember, for example, talking to Alex Rosen, the sports director at Hoffenheim, and he said to me at the time that Julian wasn't very keen to talk English all the time. So he wanted really the spotlight on signing German players. But it was Alex Rosen who always presented him the players. The same at Leipzig with Krösche, Markus Krösche, the sports director. It was Krösche who suggested Sørloth, for example, as a striking force. And Julian obviously looked at these players, but he's able to work with this kind of player. So I think he would be definitely be happy to work in that kind of setup. And I think if you look at the Bayern Munich squad, it is quite good. I mean, yes, you can complain about or you can discuss if a player like Mark Rocker is really good enough to play for Bayern Munich. But then I think it's just a side issue, really. If you look at the first 15, 16 players, they got a good quality. They just signed Upamecano, who, in my opinion, is at least as good as Jerome Bell Boateng. So you're absolutely right. You wouldn't need to give Boateng another 3 years extension. So I think if Bayern Munich want Julian Nagelsmann. If Julian wants to join Bayern Munich, it will get expensive, it will get ugly, but in the end, they will get him.
I mean, that's the natural process. Things have to go at a big club now. You don't want to have your coach to be too deeply involved into recruitment. I think coaches want to know what's going on and maybe discuss about it, and they are rounds where you sit together and say, okay, these are our transfer targets, and what do you think about it? But the job at a big club is done as Ronnie described it, and or it's done like this at most of the club. The idea that a manager in German football is like the old school manager in English football, that has has a complete running of the sporting side of the club in his hands. I think it's and I'm wondering if Flick has this idea. I doubt it. I think there is it's just a sign of distrust, and because if you're having the feeling the technical director or the sports director brings in players that don't help you, there is a growing distrust, and maybe that is what happened at Bayern, because he was unhappy about Rocca or Buna Sarr or others.
Well, this started earlier, Christoph, if you remember. Hansi Flick was only in his job for a couple of months before he very publicly attacked Hasan Salihamidžić for not signing anyone to strengthen in the winter break. And then Hasan Salihamidžić presented Odriozola. And I think that's where the distrust started, and it's never been resolved since. And it only seems to have worsened. We should also mention that Hansi Flick made the point, which you very rarely hear from a Bayern manager, that he felt the squad was worse this season in terms of the quality, and he said it's a fact, everyone knows this. So I don't know if the situation is resolvable, but Ronnie, two more things on Julian, because I know you're reasonably well connected in that respect. Is there any chance, because we get asked this a lot on at The Athletic, is there any chance that Julian might not go to Bayern but go to Spurs instead, because there might be a vacancy as well in the summer?
I think there's no chance at all. I mean, if he leaves, I don't think he plans to leave Leipzig, or he hasn't planned to leave Leipzig 3 weeks ago. Let's put it this way. But his next stepping stone is definitely not Spurs. No, this is the term of we're talking about the super clubs like Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Chelsea, these kind of clubs. I don't see him at Spurs at all.
And do you see him actually, if he does move on eventually, move on as a championship winner? Because Bayern are now only 5 points clear. Leipzig had a great win, 4-1 away to Werder. And the way Bayern are playing, or the players that Bayern are playing at the moment, might suggest, with all the injuries, that the Bundesliga isn't quite over yet.
No, the Bundesliga is over yet. Otherwise, Hansi Flick would have fielded another team last Saturday. He was, after they beat Leipzig 10 days ago, the Bundesliga is over. Bayern Munich will be the next champion, and probably for the next 23 years, with one or two exceptions. That's quite clear. But you ask about Julian. Is he a champion? I think he is. Yeah, I think the coaches I've seen in German football in the last 5 years, he's in the top three, top five. Tuchel, Julian, Klopp. And a few years ago, I would have counted Joachim Löw in as well, because I really rate him as a coach, even if he hasn't got the results, and maybe even if he hasn't got... he hasn't made the right decisions lately. But I think Julian, if you watch the training, he really invents himself, the training sessions he comes up with, the team talks, the tactical preparation of the team, the way he decides which player to play in which position. I think he's really second to none.
Interesting that Ronnie didn't mention Hansi Flick in his list of the top German coaches.
Yeah, but no, I think he's a very good coach, and he did the obvious thing at Bayern Munich when they were suffering with Niko Kovac maybe playing too deep. He did the sensible things, like, you know, they push the whole team a few yards forward, attack more, win the ball earlier. And he seems to be very, very good with the players by building these even them and us mentality. You know, it's us inside the team, dressing room. We are one crew and we've got an enemy outside. And even if the sports director is the enemy outside.
Would it be enough, though, to move past PSG on Wednesday night, on Tuesday night? What do you think?
I think they got a mountain to climb because they're missing Lewandowski. And if you saw the first leg with Lewandowski, they maybe would have won it 5-2 or something. Choupo-Moting is a good striker. I think his movements at Bayern Munich the last few games are very good, but he's not as clinical as Lewandowski, and maybe he can't be after he's been a substitute now for 2 or 3 years. He was even a substitute at Paris Saint-Germain early on. They would need to win 2-0, and it's very, very difficult, but not impossible.
Agree. Yeah, it's possible, but I'm more in the rather impossible team because Lewandowski is missing, and that seems to me the decisive point. It was a decisive point in the first leg, and I would be surprised if they would overcome it in the second leg. So I'm not too optimistic for Bayern right now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, it looked like mission impossible for Dortmund when they were drawn against Manchester City. However, after a very decent performance and a result that still leaves one or two possibilities, 2-1 defeat at the Etihad, how do we feel about their chances? They prepared for this game with a 3-2 win at Stuttgart, the sort of win that perhaps a couple of months ago they wouldn't have won. But they stuck at it, they had resilience, they had quality up front, even efficiency, if you will, and they turned it around. Will they find that same kind of resilience and consistency, and will they show up at home and actually knock City out? Is it possible? Ronnie, you're smiling.
Yeah, who knows when Dortmund will show up and not? Nobody knows. Not even the man with the glass ball knows that. I think Saturday's game against Stuttgart, I just saw the highlights, but it seemed to me a very typical Dortmund performance. You know, they scored some really great goals. The third goal from Knauf, the young guy, was fantastic. The way he dribbled around the Stuttgart defender. But then they were so open. They left so much space to Stuttgart that you felt like, hold on, do you know something about balance? And so it will be a very interesting game. I don't know how you felt. I was quite surprised or disappointed about Manchester City. They played very passively, I felt, compared to the way they play in England lots of time. They weren't really taking the game to Dortmund all the time. But then I think they lost against Leeds on Saturday. So I think that's been enough poor results for Manchester City. And after two not so great games, they probably will really show up. And well, my tip would be a, a 2-1 win for City, that they might suffer or something, but in the end we'll go through.
I'm a bit more optimistic for Dortmund, because I was really, really impressed how they played at City. I think it was their best performance in the season. I liked the way how they played out from the back. Rarely got under the pressure. Most teams who play City are under, and there is still some room for improvement, and the room for improvement has a name, because Erling Haaland right now has a bit of a difficult phase in recent games, and but there is any day it's possible that he might explode, and the chance getting through against City is not huge. I mean, right now City, so the A team, I think they were playing a kind of B team against Leeds, is probably the best team in the world right now, but they seem to have issues in the Champions League, losing the nerves against opponents they would normally beat, so maybe that will also have an effect on Wednesday. So there is a chance for Dortmund, and I wouldn't have thought it a week ago before the first leg. I think they would just be overwhelmed by City.
Yeah, well, and Dortmund might well have to win the Champions League if they want to be in the competition next season, because they are still, as we said earlier, 7 points adrift of Frankfurt in fourth spot. Before we go, I think we have to talk a little bit about Köln. They lost a huge game at home to Mainz. 3-2, Mainz now looking very, very good as far as staying up is concerned. The improvement under Bo Svensson has been formidable. They are now in 14th spot with 28 points, but Köln dropping very fast. Still 10 points clear of Schalke, but that is scant consolation because they are in 17th spot and look like they might go down. Bielefeld 3 points ahead of them in 16th. And Marcus Gisdol, who had been on the verge of getting dismissed for the last, I don't know, it feels like 6 months now, finally was given his marching orders. And our old friend of the Bundesliga, Friedhelm Funkel, has come back to save them. I think that's bad news in the league in a sense that he will no longer be able to offer unsolicited advice to other clubs how they should manage the likes of Bayern, for example. But let's see if he can save them. Christoph, I'll start with you, because Köln is, of course, a club that's reasonably close to your heart, having lived in the city for a number of years. I guess you're not really surprised by what's happened there.
I'm not surprised by... I feel a bit for Gisdol, because I watched the match yesterday, and found them... It was much more entertaining than you would have expected before. And Cologne was unlucky, because for the first time in many, many weeks or months, they found a lot of offensive solutions. And I think the main reason was that they had a striker. I mean, we have been talking about them playing without a striker for weeks and weeks, only fielding midfield players. And now Sebastian Anderson came back from an injury, had two chances to score a goal, and altogether Cologne looked improved, but in the end they not completely unlucky, lost against Mainz. So it was a logical step to dismiss Gisdol, but I don't know if it's really enough that Köln has to offer to stay in the Bundesliga. And I think they will need a lot of luck in weeks to come to stay in the Bundesliga right now?
Well, I think Gisdol was a bit unlucky in that, as Christoph pointed out, that maybe yesterday's game was his best game with Cologne this season. They really were attacking, they created chances, and as Christoph said, Sebastian Andersson made difference. So they also had another player with Florian Kainz, who provided lots of crosses, went into dribbling on the wing. So maybe the new manager found a better team than the old manager had in the month gone by. I've got even the theory, if Köln, even if they lose the next two games against Leverkusen and Leipzig, they still got a chance, because the last four games, if they got into a run by just scoring that one goal by Sebastian Andersson and then score more goals, they can all win the last four games. They're playing Augsburg, Freiburg, Hertha Berlin and Schalke. And Hertha Berlin, that's quite interesting. They still have to play all the contenders in the relegation battles. Hertha play Mainz, they play Bielefeld, and they play Cologne. And if they manage to lose all three games, they might be really in trouble. And Hertha, I think it's easy to say that they've got the fantastic squad, that they should be 10 places higher than they are, but they don't get out of there. The football they play is just a bit chaotic in the last few weeks. So I can see Cologne fighting with Hertha at least for the spot, the 16th place, and then play the third team from the third place team from the second division for relegation or for a playoff game.
It will also still be difficult for Mainz, because they, for example, have to play Bayern, Dortmund, Leipzig, and towards the end of the season in their last three matches, I think. So probably they need to have enough points before the last three rounds, and that might be difficult for them. But I found interesting when mentioning Hertha that Pal Dardai had a go at Askar Zibar after the match. So he openly criticized him for the day after the match. He was openly criticizing Askar Zibar because he was frustrated coming off the pitch, and obviously refused to handshake the manager, and that after a game where he scored a goal and provided an assist to another. And an interesting move by Dardai, maybe trying to put things together at this chaotic squad that can play some nice football, has some still difficulties to defend, and probably still has difficult to have a united dressing room, and so maybe that was a sign that Dardai wanted to send out.
Yeah. Well, one last question I have for the two of you: if Schalke and Köln were to go down, and Schalke will go down, of course, but if Köln joined them, how much of a blow is it for the league on the whole to lose such big traditional storied clubs with huge followings, especially if, and I hesitate to say this, but especially if Bochum and Greuther Fürth were to promote it in their place? Hamburg at the moment second, but we never know with Hamburg. Christoph, is there a danger that, you know, the Bundesliga will lose a lot of its luster if that were come to pass?
Even as a Bochum supporter, I know that Cologne and Schalke are bigger clubs than Bochum is, and I think most of the people in the Bundesliga would be happy if at least Hamburg would return to the Bundesliga, although they are doing their best to avoid it a third year in a row. If you don't know, they lost at home to Darmstadt this weekend. And maybe the worst case would be Holstein Kiel and Fürth going up. But there are so many big clubs that are stuck in the second division, or at least in the third division. Or when you look at the third division, one of the most traditional club in Germany, Kaiserslautern, is in the danger of being relegated to the fourth level of German football. And I think we could make an extra podcast on the situation of the so-called Traditionsvereine in Germany. So the clubs with the big history that are struggling, and on the other side, the how would you call them, non-traditional clubs like RB Leipzig or Hoffenheim and others. That are doing much better, and what the reasons for this is, and yet it plays a part, because when that Schalke is going down is self-inflicted. I mean, and the same goes for Cologne, and they are too, normally they would be too big to fail, but for Cologne it would be even their seventh relegation in Bundesliga history. So there is something missing at Cologne on a level that doesn't have to do with Gisdol and Funkel and coaches and players, but in the organization of the club.
I think it would be a huge blow for the Bundesliga if they lose Schalke and Cologne, because I think the biggest asset of the Bundesliga is really their supporters. If you compare the Bundesliga to other big leagues, what stands out is really the atmosphere at the ground. Not really at the very moment, but if spectators are let into the stadium again. The football is half decent, as in the French league or in the Italian league, but you wouldn't get that kind of even peaceful but fearful atmosphere. And if you ask the people who broadcast German football, who paid a lot of money to broadcast the Bundesliga games, they will be, well, shivering and shaking their heads, because a game like Wolfsburg against, as you mentioned, Greuther Fürth or Holstein Kiel will be watched maybe by, I don't know, 30,000, whereas Köln against on the television, I mean, yeah, or even less, you mean, yeah, but Schalke against Cologne will draw in 2 or 3 million people. So yes, the Bundesliga would lose a lot with these two clubs going down.
Well, let's hope it won't come to pass, although there is a distinct possibility. But whatever happens, I hope that you'll be back, Ronnie, because it was
anything
really nice
you want to know on Kamada, just give me a ring.
For the Kamada special, we'll invite you back on. No, but I think there is enough good reasons to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Christoph. Thank you, dear listener. We'll be back with another episode next week. Until such time, take care.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this. Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But Striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although Striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F. Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts, and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
The Athletic.